Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Scott Cluthie's Love Cafe. Join us for the best in relationships, family, health, well-being, spirituality, intuitive development, the future, and the past. All present in the Love Cafe. The Love Cafe call-in line, 347-308-8478. That's 347-308-8478. And now, Scott Cluthie's Love Cafe. Hello and good evening. Live on a Monday evening across America and around the world, it's time for another edition of the Love Cafe with your host, Scott Cluthie. And as I was posting on Facebook and LinkedIn and all that good stuff just a few minutes ago, really, there's not a person who read those words who probably couldn't gain something of considerable worth to themselves listening tonight with my wonderful guest. It's Dr. Peter Sacco. Dr. Sacco, Peter, welcome to Love Cafe Radio again.
Thank you so much, Scott, for having me on, and everybody listening. I hope you're having just an exceptional day.
Well, your work is of great value, and that's what I value. That's why I do what I do for 35 years. And you were with us previously on Positively Incorrect, which spanned across my time with Sirius Satellite Radio and here on Blog Talk Radio, but now it's the Love Cafe Radio. And going with all the Love Cafe things I'm all up in. But Peter has revised and re-released a very important work, I guess about from a decade ago. Is that about right, Peter?
Yeah, originally? Actually, Scott, I wrote the book. I'm going to ballpark it. I'm lost already because it's 2016. I don't know where the heck the last 10 years of my life went to. But it came out in the 2000s, about 10 years ago, you're correct. And it took me about 8 years to get the first version together because I literally worked with over 1,000 people easily with anger management issues. And from that, I devised the 12 original different types of anger and what's your anger type. And then recently, Scott, you and I were talking about it before the show started, the whole technological rage aspect. So the last 3 years, I started to look at issues surrounding texting and online social media and saw that, wow, a lot of the worst anger issues, especially when it comes to bullying in kids and teens, even adults,
yes.
That's where it is now.
Yes, and it's pervasive and it's so easy. That's a whole nother thing to talk about. It's easy because you can sit behind a computer screen. You can sit there in your underwear or whatever, and you can hammer away anything, and you can present yourself as big a bully or as you want to be, and apparently some people are. Dr. Peter Sacco has been working with individuals in private practice support groups for over a decade, and he specializes in anger management classes, workshops, seminars, individual coaching, counseling. As a professor, he teaches at universities and colleges in the United States and Canada, and he teaches courses in addiction studies, police studies, criminal psychology, and education. He also produces television shows and hosts Canada's most popular radio show on mental health, Matters of the Mind. He's an award-winning executive producer. I'm also back deeply involved, Peter, in doing video production, as I was, well, in different spots along the road here for quite a while. But he has really taken his message to the media in a meaningful way. And the website is Peter Sacco, simple as that, S-A-C-C-O, petersacco.com. You can find out so much more. He's authored so many books. But I just don't know if anything you've ever done, Peter, is important as this issue of anger, and especially in the world we live in.
You know what, Scott? I get asked that a lot lately, and it started, I'm going to say, around March, April, when you guys in the States there started seeing the individuals running for GOP in terms of mm-hmm. Donald, one namely Donald Trump. And people were asking me a lot. They go, wow. Like, and by the way, I am Canadian. So the way we do politics here in Canada is a little more, I'm going to say, passive, assertive passive. We don't have the extremes from one party or another. It's like you're not all one or the other. And there's a middle road because we have a third party and then there's a couple of other smaller ones. But one of the things I kept getting asked about is how can people, so many people get so angry about elections? and just about politics. And then combined with that, prior to that, my mother and my sister were heading to France, Paris, not too long after they had that, you know, in the clubs, nightclubs there, the bombings and the shootings and all
yes.
that stuff. And we were having these, you know, ongoing terrorist acts and violence in the schools and all that stuff. So at that point there, that's where I started getting asked, why are people becoming so angry? Why are they just displacing it out? And so that's where I really started getting into talking about this, not only in Canada and the States, but also worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I can look at some incidents in my life where anger, I think I'm really grateful for that part of me that has that self-reflective nature. That's who I am a lot, you know, Mr. Philosopher, whatever, hidden under very well under all the personas I run around in. But I remember getting super angry a long time ago, probably 25 years now, ripe 64, about the outcome of a football game. And I let the outcome of a football game control my energy for the entire Christmas period, practically. And that's when I realized that I was attached to something that, A, I had no control over. I wasn't playing football, right? I couldn't throw it, catch it, or anything else. I was watching it. That I couldn't control the outcome, only observe the outcome. And who I was when the football game ended was the same person as the person I was when it began. So whether they had won or lost, it wasn't really going to change my life condition at all. And I realized, really, I was angry at myself for wanting to use something else external to resolve my own problem. I didn't suddenly become an enlightened light bulb from there on out. But so when you talk about events like people, especially like watching TV, watching this election we've got going on, and I've certainly made my satirical comedy video replies to some of the things I see going on, and anybody can go to lovecafehouston.com and see that. Hopefully you'll laugh. But, you know, it was like taking back, owning my anger, if you will. And talk a little about that, because I think so much of this is people are not being responsible about their issues, about what's making them angry, rather than the issue that they say is making them angry. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, Scott. I think, you know what, a lot of times, you know, you use the football experience, which ironically, at the beginning of 2016, I got invited to go onto a couple of Cincinnati radio stations to talk about their, you know, to commiserate their agony when, and I didn't even want to tell them that I'm a Steelers fan, when the Steelers beat the Bengals,
no.
and they were livid. But I got to say, I'm not only a Steelers fan, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan. So if anybody understands pain and misery, I'm a
Buffalo
walking
Bills
billboard.
Fan.
Yeah.
Buffalo Bill fan would. Like Cubby fan,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So with that said, I think a lot of people project, you know, and they
yeah.
have triggers
yeah.
or whatever it is. And just something to kind of throw out there, because you brought up football, and this is a great tie-in. In the United States of America before, and I don't know what it is in Canada, but I'm going to guess we have, it would be up there as well too, but not even close. On Super Bowl Sundays before, there was actually a Super Bowl Sunday, if you want to call it a defense or a syndrome, Super Bowl Sunday syndrome, that I believe it was put out by a couple of famous lawyers in the States. And we talked about this in a couple of my lectures, that on that day, on Super Bowl Sunday, more women, especially wives or girlfriends, are physically beaten or abused by
yes.
their spouses than any other day of the year. And so then people go, well, gosh, it's got to be the football, such a violent sport. It's like gladiators. And, you know, it must be that's what's causing the guys to do it. And, it's, you know, and if you're using that excuse or that reasoning, you're using the same reasoning, though, the reason that people go and shoot up other people, they watched and played too many video games. And that's not the case. The problem is the individual has some sort of aggression, within their personality, something that has not been resolved, and it's probably, you know, and Scott, a lot of times people want to say, well, it's definitely born. It's got to be born. It's a biological thing. But a lot of times, if you trace the roots back, it's learned within the family structure. Usually learn there's abuse in the house, or the child's witnessing, well, one parent beating on the other, or a sibling, or that stuff. And so they bottle it. And if they're not taught to express it properly, then they have either what's called passive anger or passive aggressive anger. And so at some point, it's going to come out. You see some people literally go postal, to use a U.S. term, where they just explode. And that's basically years and years and years of pent-up aggression that finally come out.
Yeah, absolutely. My guest, Dr. Peter Sacco. And as always, we have a call-in line. Love to hear from you while we're live on the air. Most people listen to these shows in archives. It's frustration of internet radio for me, a live radio guy. But that's okay. But the guest call-in line, we do love hearing from you, 347-308-8478. Love Cafe Radio today. Your host, Scott Cluthy, with Dr. Peter Sacco. And we're talking about, really, do you know your anger type? So we want to talk a little and focus in on a little self-realization for our audience. You say there are basically 12 types of anger, Peter. What are those, and what are the differentiators in these angers?
Well, yeah, there is absolutely 12 different types. But you know what, Scott? There are overlaps. And what's interesting, too, is when some individuals have one, they basically, it's almost like potato chips. Once you start eating them, you can't stop. And I use that analogy with these angers. Like, they overlap and you'll have more than one. So, you know, some of the more common ones that I refer to and people can look at. Everybody knows what road rage is, which in itself, there's a lot of individuals that take on kind of like the persona of their vehicles, where it's like this iron tank where they feel once they're inside, they become a different individual. And what I've, you know, created in this new book is technological rage. And so what we've had up here in Canada for problems, and I'm sure it's happened in the States, are you put two types of rage together, people who are texting when they're driving, and which is not only, you know, a bad thing to do, it's also illegal. So just within that, you can see how two types of angers can go together. I get into addictive anger, where people are just addicted to their anger, or petrified anger, where somebody has wronged you from a long, long, long time ago. And anybody listening, can you think about something or someone that wronged you in the past? You think about it for a while, and you can literally raise your blood pressure from 0 to 60 in seconds, and then you're thinking, oh, my God, this is like yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. Reactivated, yeah.
And you know what, Scott? A lot of people will develop habitual anger. They become habit. You know, it's just habitual. It becomes a way of life.
Addictive.
Just like people are just overly miserable.
Is there a difference in the way, you know, I am a big proponent of the gender called female, which you have to be careful what word you use now, because someone will get offended. Women getting their power back, taking their power back, and I believe there's even a shift for me anyway, globally, into a more feminine, what I call the feminine principle of receptivity, of more group and nurturing, and these things arising. You wouldn't maybe see it at the surface, but I believe that is the actual impulse that's coming up in a way, if you will, evolutionary way. But is there, and but that, of course, the other side of that is more women acting out. I mean, it's like for the first time, a woman, wasn't the first time, but very recently, a woman was the most wanted fugitive in the United States of America. She tops the list right now, as a matter of fact. And so I'm seeing more women in positions of terror, crime, you know, whether it's a terrorist or whether it's a criminal activity, or they just rounded up like 18 owners of a prostitution ring, of course, had young women in sexual slavery. They were all women. What is there a difference in the way that anger is processed, is expressed in men and women, or is that just more like a personality thing of who the person is?
You know what, Scott? I would say it could go both ways, and I know I'm kind of sitting on the razor's edge with this. First of all, you have to look at an individual's personality. No two people are going to be alike, whether you're male, female. It's going to differ because everybody's temperament's different, everybody's experiences are different, everybody's personalities are different. Now, if you go back, and I'm going to say, you know, because this is really, I'm going to say 20 years ago. Up until that point, 20 to 15 years ago, it was acceptable, generally acceptable for a male to be more outwardly aggressive with their anger because it was almost expected because they're macho. You know, you tie into the whole, well, it's based on the testosterone hormone thing, whereas women were generally passive. They were told to keep it inside. And so with that said, if you look at statistics and you look at medicine, you found that women were more likely sufferers of rheumatoid arthritis, which has been linked to individuals who turn aggression and anger inward on themselves. And you also looked, when you're turning stuff in and you're not expressing it, it lowers B and T cells within, yes, B and T cells within your body.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time there, you look at it, there was a higher rate of incidences even in breast cancer. So, you know, you can't say it's an exact cause-effect relationship, but there's probably correlations. And then you had more women smoking, more women drinking than, you know, now so than the last 20 years. So how I will qualify this, the difference with this is, and my hat goes off to any woman out there, especially a single mother who is juggling two and three jobs, raising her kids, which is a career in its own, and you put all those stresses together, and as a guy, I'm sitting here thinking, Scott, oh my God, these women that can hold that all together, never lose it, man, they're my heroes. They know how to basically control their moods, control their temperaments, and they've got great personalities. So with that said, there are differences, but I would like to qualify. I believe that when more so, and there are guys out there, single dads that are doing the same thing, two, three jobs, juggling the kids. I believe when they're doing this repeatedly, and they're able and methodically to organize their lives, maintain a degree of self-discipline, speak to their kids effectively, communicate effectively, and know how to express their own emotions and have some sort of good catharsis, whether it be exercising, meditation, going for massages, working out. I believe it's not a gender thing, but rather a personality thing when it comes to controlling anger.
Very good. Dr. Peter Sacco, my guest this evening here on, in the Love Cafe with your host, Scott Cluthie. It's great to have him live from Canada tonight. And call in line 347-308-8478. Later in the show, Anne Catherine will be with us. And Catherine's book is Boundaries in an Overconnected World. So that's going to kind of relate to this, to your boundaries with those crazy people around you, or maybe it's you. One of the things that Peter's book does is not just talk about these various types, and so, but really take you through a checklist to discover what your anger type might be and tools to deal with it. So one of the things you talk about, which is important for people to grasp, is how thoughts determine your emotions. It's an instantaneous chain, and it's hard for us to connect in real time because it happens so fast, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, Scott. And I'm glad you bring that up because a lot of times people that I've worked with over the years, it'll say, man, oh, man, I just snapped. And I'll say, well, what were you thinking before you snapped, or what got you upset? And they'll go, well, nothing. Well, you know, you can't get a feeling unless you first think it. And so, you know, with that said, one of the things I do within this book is to actually teach individuals to monitor your thoughts. Look at your thoughts, but more or less, Scott, go even deeper and ask yourself, why are you thinking that way? Why are you holding on to negative thinking or stinking thinking? You know, you stand to get something out of it. And people go, oh, no, what do I stand to get out of feeling angry or telling myself angry stuff? And I'll say, well, perhaps you're using your anger as an intimidator. This is your way of controlling or abusing a spouse, a mate, your kids, even animals, taking it out, or coworkers. You're using it to bully. Perhaps you're thinking negatively or whatever because you're getting something out of being a victim. Your people are enabling you. You realize this. So even though people are enabling you, you're still able to control them in a negative sense. And so this is what happens, Scott, within a lot of dysfunction. where thoughts, people, like-minded thinkers kind of gravitate together. I don't know if you'd agree with that, like birds of a feather flock together.
Sure they do. If people feel comfortable in an environment where they feel supported in their belief system.
And that's the sit, Scott. The thing is once you put a bunch of thoughts that are negative together in your mind, you're more likely to attract more and more negative thoughts because you're going to just keep fertilizing these and perpetuating them basically on a law of attraction level. And positive people are going to pick up on your frequency or your signal and saying, oh my gosh, I don't want to be around this person because they're angry all the time. Whereas angry people, unfortunately, attract either angry people. And if you're a passive person where your anger is turned inward, you're more likely to attract an abusive type of person because they can take advantage of you. And then once again, they, in a roundabout way, conform what you're already telling yourself, that I'm useless, I'm not worth anything. And this is what you get in a lot of abusive and battering relationships.
My guest, Dr. Peter Sacco, this evening in the Love Cafe, your host, Scott Cluthie. Let's talk about some of the rules. And the book goes into great depth and newly revised, too. And that's, I'm kind of saving that last part about the new technology and the millennials for the last 5 or 6 minutes here. But let's talk about some of the rules for managing anger. What are some rules that people can actually take into heart now if they find that they're having issues with anger? It's just coming up inappropriately, the wrong place, the wrong reason, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I like to first, you know, qualify, I guess, that question with the answer of the book is twofold. You can either use it to work your own anger, or you can use it if you're living with somebody that's angry. So with that said, there are a lot of tools within this book that if you are living with an angry person, and generally speaking, you could potentially be saying something or activating their anger, either consciously, purposely, unconsciously, as being their trigger. So there are ways for you to turn it around by not saying what you normally would say, behaving differently, or identifying the situation. And one of the things that I do throw out there, Scott, which really is a kibosher for arguments, generally speaking, somebody who is always getting angry at you, especially in a co-working situation or in a marital situation, one of the fastest ways to diffuse that when a person starts accusing you of blah, 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 you're a bad person, you know, you're always making mistakes, is to say, you know what, you're probably right. I do make mistakes because I'm human. And I want to thank you for pointing that out to me. You are a really good person for pointing that out. And maybe, you know, I can learn. I will try better. And that's to that person that's generally waiting for you to come back and say, really? That's what you think of me? Well, here's what you are. And so this is one of the ways I get into various ways of de-escalating it.
Sticks and stones, by the way. Remember that? I
don't
think we even know what sticks and stones are anymore because we don't break our bones. Dr. Peter Sacco this evening in the Love Cafe with your host, Scott Cluthie. Great to have you guys out there. Let's talk about the millennials, new technology, and the ever-present inter-anger.
You know what, Scott? I just have never seen it's interesting. This started out, I'm going to say, a few years ago. I was on a talk show, a major network. I was only supposed to be on for a half hour. I wound up being on for 3 hours. It was a phone-in show, and it was on bullying, cyberbullying, and texting bullying. And while I was sitting on that panel, I had mothers who had called in from parts of Canada and the States who had lost their kids who had committed suicide because they were bullied online. And then there was other ones that were calling in saying, I think my kid's a bully. And I had other adults calling in and saying, my gosh, I get bullied when I go on Facebook, for gosh sakes, or Twitter. And I think this is what you're seeing now more, Scott, are you're getting individuals that create these fake or alternate personas. They're like, how should we say, Bruce Banner from the Hulk you know, the mild mannered person
right.
when they're in school, when they're at work, and then they go online when they get home. And this is where they turn green, and then this is where they vent. So say that you got an issue at work with a coworker. Well, I'm going to go take it out at home. When I go home, I'm going to go onto some forum, and that's where I'm going to air it out.
Wow. You know, it used to be, before you could get online and berate everybody and anything you didn't like, some musician, you know, said, well, I don't really like their music that much, but I like so-and-so, you know. But now you find a post on that musician, and you write a diatribe about what's wrong with them, how screwed up they are, how they'll never be any good, how they're not worth the awards they've won, how to burr, 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 burr. It's like this license to kill. It's a sad state of affairs. What are we... I mean, so much for the age of Aquarius. What, Peter Sacco, do you see if we do not... Because it's a tidal wave, Peter. There's more anger being expressed out there than I think I've ever seen. Maybe it's just because it's more visible, but where could we be headed as a society with all this anger if we don't become having a little more self-control, a little more civility and respect for each other, and, you know, an ability to have discourse without distrust?
Well, Scott, I'm going to just guess, and I actually wrote a book last year called The Internet Apocalypse, which looked at this sort of thing. And one of the things that I came across doing a ton of research on this is what we are aiming down a slippery slope is that we are compromising our communication skills. We are spending too much time texting, too much time sending emails that way, and not enough, first of all, eye-to-eye, face-to-face communication over the phone. A lot of people would prefer to send a quick text than actually pick up a phone and communicate, which could probably take 2 minutes, but instead you're going to text for the next hour and a half to 2 hours, which could have been done in 2 minutes. And so with that said, Scott, the problems that we are seeing now is going to arise in conflict resolution. Not only, you know, when people are conflict resolution, well, it's got to be about work. It's got, you know, it's some big high-profile business. No, we're talking about marriages, and we're talking about parents and kids. They are just lacking the abilities to communicate. And I remember back in the day, the average parent spent roughly 2.5 to 6.5 minutes per day speaking to their kids, and married couples, 12.5 minutes per day. This was before 1994 and the internet.
So probably those curves have gone down, not up. Unless you're commenting on the post that your wife did online in the other room.
Maybe, yeah, especially if it was something, you know, uplifting for you.
Yeah. We can barely touch the surface of all this, obviously, in a half an hour. But, Peter Sacco, tell us about some of the tools and assets people will find in picking up a copy of Do You Know Your Anger Type? The Revised Edition.
Yeah, absolutely. If you get this book, you can go right to my website at petersacco.com or Amazon. You can get it for $1. And I want to get it out there. It's been published on 4 continents. It's because anger is rampant, and especially in kids now. And it's up to parents to try to help their kids be the difference makers. And you will learn, first of all, what your anger type is. Second of all, why you have these anger types. Third, ways of coping and managing not only with your anger, but angry people around you. And then also protocol and how should we say proper protege for what etiquette for what you should be doing when it comes to texting, talking online, communicating, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, that kind of stuff. Because you know what, Scott? I believe the time has now come. We need to have courses in school just on how to communicate properly and effectively in this age of technology.
Yeah, and that'll be followed by classes in how to write.
Absolutely.
Spell.
Or
how's
sign
that?
Your name.
The people don't even know they used a spell check, and they don't know which word to use on spell check. They don't know the word.
Yeah, and when in doubt,
heard
it somewhere. LOL.
LOL. You really do. You have a vast treasure trove of research empirical but also practical knowledge for us, Peter. So you stay in touch with me and touch me on things that maybe you'd like to share. You've got a lot of great work, and so we should do some more of this, if you will. You're a busy guy, I know, but okay?
You got it, Scott, and I'm going to wish the Houston Astros luck, and hopefully they get that wild card spot.
Ain't happening, but I love my Astros. I watch every game. But when you lost two of your four rotation pitchers and two of your starting nine players who are two of the most important players for the year, ain't happening. But thank you.
And you know what,
Scott? Kind, my friend. I will say go
Rockets, because
of the season.
Yeah, I am an Oakland A's fan, so there you go.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we had some fun tonight.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, speaking of coincidences, but I will say the Texans are surprisingly solid, and they look like they could actually be hosting more than just the Super Bowl this year. You never know. But I'm still a Rockets guy. This is all prelims to basketball season for me. I'm a hoopster.
It's all good.
It's all good. Dr. Peter Sacco, his website, PeterSacco, SACCO.com. Simple as that. The new revised edition, Do You Know Your Anger Type? Folks, you can study and learn a lot of things, but as they say over the archway, know thyself. That's the place to start. Dr. Peter Sacco, have a great night up there in the great north, okay?
You take care, my friend, and everybody out there. You guys have awesome nights.
Pleasure to talk to you again, Peter. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
All right. We'll be back with more. It's Ann Catherine on boundaries in our over-connected world. And let me tell you, ain't that the truth? This is Scott Cluthy. We'll be right back with more from the Love Cafe. Don't forget our call-in line, 347-308-8478. And visit the Love Cafe on Facebook. Just look for Scott Cluthy's Love Cafe. We'll be right back. Hi, Scott Cluthy, host and producer of Love Cafe Radio and Love Cafe Video and other media as well. Glad you're listening tonight. Have you ever thought about hosting your own radio show? Well, as a graduate of Coach University and a professional broadcaster over 30 years, I can guide you to your dreams of having your own talk show that sounds professional and is professional. Every aspect of your show, from the scripting to the concept to the execution, you'll be a professional in broadcasting after working with me, either on a monthly basis for long-term or short-term, to increase or improve your abilities as a broadcaster and do better programming, attract a larger audience, and even more quality guests because of the quality and professionalism of your broadcasting. I'd like to help you. Give me a call, 832-846-5270, or write to me at scott@lovecafehouston.com. And let's have a conversation about you becoming the potential radio star that's there within you today. Thanks. Welcome back to the Love Cafe with Scott Cluthy. Our call-in line, 347-308-8478 for tonight's guest. Glad to have you in the Love Cafe. Now, Scott Cluthy and the Love Cafe. Well, good evening across America and around the world live. It's time for another edition of Positively Incorrect with your host, Scott Cluthy. My guest this evening is the one and only, it's Alan C. Fox. Alan, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Glad to be here.
Great to have you back with us. In fact, dear listeners, if you're so intrigued, you might listen to the second half of tonight's show. I'm going to rerun my interview with Alan from about 6 or 7 months ago on his very first book under the same title, People Tools. But tonight, it's People Tools for Business, 50 Strategies for Business. With your host, Scott Cluthy, another edition of Positively Incorrect. Great to have you out there. This is a show I think everybody out there listening, especially whether you're listening on your iPhone, your smartphone, which is smarter than I am, your internet connection, whatever it might be, or listening to this later. This show is going to be loaded with information, ideas, and really a lot of critical information about protecting your boundaries. I have one of the real experts on that who's really been at it for a long, long time with me this evening. It's Ann Catherine. Ann, welcome to Positively Incorrect.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it. Well, your book is pretty critical for a lot of people, and I think a lot of people, unfortunately, learn how important it is after the fact, and sometimes in very expensive or personally damaging ways in their relationships, business, and otherwise. Boundaries in an overconnected world. Setting limits to preserve your focus, privacy, relationships, and sanity. And sometimes people would say, well, that's not possible, Scott. Just out from New World Library, one of my favorite publishers to work with, certainly. Anne Catherine is a therapist who specializes in helping people, even though she's now retired, I understand, working with boundaries, eating disorders, in particular food addiction. She wrote the first simple book on boundaries, Boundaries, Where You End and I Begin. Over 250,000 copies of that sold. Was talking about food addiction 20 years ago. Well, so was I, actually. Before most people had even heard of it, she holds an MA in psychology from Vanderbilt University, over 40 years' experience as a therapist in agencies, hospitals, and private practices, and she's appeared on most major media, of course. Her website, oneannecatherine.com, and that's K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, so I can get the spelling right, the number one, Anne with an E, A-N-N-E, Catherine. com. Check it out for yourself. And boundaries in an overconnected world. You know, Anne, you've been talking about these issues for many, many decades now, and it's kind of almost humorous to hear you talking about sitting at your computer 25 years ago with a green screen, hitting digits, and of course your computer couldn't talk to anyone else's computer. I remember this well. I mean, just having a computer was a big deal. And then you had your manuscript for your book, and it totally destroyed all the formatting when you went to print.
On my wedding day.
How about those dot matrix printers? Weren't they swell?
If you needed a piece of paper that would wrap around the block, that was your place to go.
That was your
way
to go.
Yeah, that was on my wedding day that happened, when the thing changed all my formatting, and I had to get it in the snail mail by the end of the day. Well, I do have a message for all of us, all who are listening, who might sometimes feel powerless and even hopeless in the face of the events going on in our world. We've had an experience of that with the government in the last few weeks of an entity just coming into our lives and making it change without us being able to do anything.
Right.
And in a way, the revolution that has occurred with electronic devices, digital devices, is similar. That, especially those of us not born to it, not so much for the younger folk, but for those of us not born to it, this has been like a tide that's just rolled over us with one new machine after another, one new use of it after another, piling up demands that make us eventually feel overwhelmed, like we can't get to it all, and then guilty for what we're not doing. In the midst of that tide, we've sort of drowned in our focus. We've had a harder time holding on to just even knowing what is most important to us. So what my message for you today is that anything that is feeling chaotic and out of your control in your life right now can be helped by setting a boundary.
Yeah, you know, I add to that, for me personally, that one of the things I've learned over the years is that if it's feeling rushed, crazy, and chaotic, slow down, which seems to be the opposite signal most people send to themselves. Slowing down has saved me a lot of misery.
Slowing down is so important, taking a break. So you can find out what it is you want to be doing instead of being just carried along.
Yeah, and it's also relevant. I mean, it's critical in relationships when you talk about boundaries. Slowing down, where the words don't leave the mouth before the mind and the feelings process the impact, the punch, or the possibility. And for me, a lot of times, it's how would I feel if someone's saying that to me? And you have to judge that, not just the boundary of, I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable, but what's appropriate.
That what you're saying there is packed with importance and nuance. At any point in your desire to communicate, separating out what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, what expresses it well, what expresses it meanly, what is a discharge of a lot of feeling that may, that is important for you to explore, but not necessarily for the other person to know about. Sometimes
discharge,
the other
that's
person
a big word.
Should know. Yeah.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, when you discharge on an electronic device on the internet, it's gone. It's there forever.
Yeah,
so
it's
you
just
press,
like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. Just if you say something before you have taken a chance to slow down and take in, what part of the message do you want someone to have? What part should you be working on just by yourself? You push that button. It goes out there on Facebook, Twitter, whatever. It'll always be there. No,
you have,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, you have a great, great insight and mastery on boundaries. And so then taking that skill set and applying it toward the new media, I know still, though, must have been tricky for you as you got rooked or fooled into opening a video somebody told you was a funny laughing dog, turned out to be a porno site in Japan, and most often, and it happens every day, a virus went into your computer you didn't know about, was attached to the video they didn't know about, that they got their friend that didn't know about it, got from somebody else that didn't know about it, it's been spread 300 times, don't know about it, and pretty soon all of your computers, you're wondering why you're moving slow, it's because they've been taken over. And they're being used as part of a massive computer email barrage from Siberia to Africa that comes to your mailbox to want to know if you want to send some money to somebody that you don't know, you know, so that you can make some money, of course.
Well, somebody's making some money. It isn't me.
It's not you. And it's certainly not for opening that video.
But it's amazing that a kid in Brazil, just picking any country at random, a 9-year-old kid could be playing your computer like a piano and you don't even know it. But strangely enough, most of these hijacked computers are actually in universities and the university doesn't know their computer is being used that way. Yeah, it is.
Much less the NSA reading our emails, but that's a whole other story. Another level. One of the things that drives me crazy, and I know you talk a lot about this, true, is the boundaries of understanding the boundaries of what to share and what not to share and with whom. Especially when it comes to family. You know, if you know that your uncle's politics or religion don't match yours, don't blind send them something here, look at this, read this, you need to know this, to convince them of your position. That is patently offensive, it's disconnected, it's impersonal, and it's impertinent. Oh, I like all those words.
Well, it's also an example of how we're not having direct relationships anymore, and what I worry most about in that case is young people. They are conducting almost all their relationships digitally.
Yeah.
And if we take the very most cryptic texting, then texting by in itself is so limiting in communicating an idea. The idea with a text is to get the nugget down as short as you can so you don't have to be writing with your thumbs forever. And that's not full enough to really convey a full idea. Even worse is when people try to work out issues texting. There's so many ways to read that incorrectly, to add an emotion that's not meant, to interpret a silence that has no meaning at all. It just means the person's not near a Wi-Fi connection. And so trying to work through a problem with a text only multiplies the problem and creates pseudo-issues that aren't even actually issues, makes it a mess. But beyond that, when kids have their relationships entirely through Facebook or social media, then they're not learning all the subtle skills that you need to have so that when you grow up, you can have a satisfying, intimate relationship very complex skills are needed, like how to negotiate, what to do when you feel like retaliating, how can you speak honestly about an issue and make room for differences in the other person. These are all skills that aren't getting practiced. And if the parents and the kids are all on a device, then they're also not getting modeled. And I fear that what we're going to have eventually is binary relationships, on or off. We don't have the skill to work it out, so I'm going to unfriend you. There are lots of other people can be my friends out in the world, and I'll unfriend you, and then I'll friend somebody else, and I'll just go through the corn patch.
That's right. We'll start a relationship on a Thursday night on a dating site, and it'll be over by Sunday night, mister. You, my guest is Anne Catherine. Her new book, Boundaries in an Overconnected World, Setting Limits to Preserve Your Focus, Privacy, Relationships, and Sanity, here on Positively Incorrect Live with your host, Scott Cluthie. The call-in line, 347-308-8478. Always love to hear from you out in the listening audience. And you share, it's very pertinent in a lot of ways, the conversation or lack thereof between a daughter and a mom, and the daughter was in an accident. Give a little scenario on that. This is an example of what you're talking about.
Yes, this is an example of a daughter being in an accident, texting her mom, I've been in an accident, and then not saying anything else. So, of course, the mom's very concerned, mm-hmm. rearranges her entire day, keeps trying to call her back, text her back, trying to find out, what happened to you? Where are you? What's happening to the kids? Where were they? Does your husband know? So she's changed her whole life, and now she's waiting. And eventually, it was 8 hours before she found out. That's a long time to be really concerned about a child, even an adult child. So it took that long before she found out her leg was broken. She was taken to a hospital, but she didn't know. Maybe it happened in a bad neighborhood, and somebody stole her phone, or her daughter was vulnerable. There's, when you don't know, you don't know. Silence doesn't tell you anything. So
yeah,
that's
a
case where, go ahead.
Finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Well, that's a case where that was the inappropriate tool to use. And even though the daughter was an accident, that's totally understandable. But even more so, in a critical situation, call, because the other person can think clearly enough to ask you the questions that they need to know to help you. So for every type of interaction, there's at least one and maybe more than one appropriate tool to use. It might be sometimes texting that's more appropriate, but other times a phone call, an email, even face-to-face will be more appropriate.
You have a lot, you don't just tell us about scenarios or histories or stories. You give us the tools, and the tools come in many levels and forms. And I just want to stress to my listening audience how vast the issue of boundaries in an overconnected world is in Anne Catherine's new book. Topics include things like intrusion violations. We can talk about that. Violating the boundary of an experience. Focus boundaries, protecting your children, violent gaming, is that leading to kids being crazy? I think so. Friends versus friends in quotation mark. Online dating, don't set yourself up for trouble. Boundaries in chat rooms and cyberspace, cultural norms, and on and on. And especially, and this is one that a lot of younger generation people are learning, in the workplace and in the workspace.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm?
Yes. Yes. To get in touch with the reality that at times the role you are in is a member role. When you go to work, you're a member of that organization. You're a member of that hierarchy, somewhere in that hierarchy. And your focus then is whatever the goals of your job are, and the boundaries there are dictated by the environment. And then when you leave work, you get on the bus to go home, you go home, then you enter a different role. You're either there alone and you enter your role as an individual person, or if you have a family or a spouse, then you're entering a different member role. You're entering your marital role or your role as a parent. With the portability of work, these boundaries have become blurred, and companies actually expect now for many of their workers to work beyond the clock, to take their devices home and keep working. That's a boundary violation on the home front. And the consequence is children or families suffering, and even businesses don't realize it, but their own work product can suffer too. When a person is trying to negotiate two different roles simultaneously, they generally don't do either of them as well.
One of the interesting things that you point out, Anne Catherine, is the, and this is something for people to think about, are the generational differences in how we communicate, in our preferred way of communicating, what we use or don't use that another generation may not even have or want. Well, why is that important? And give us some examples on that.
My funniest example is my mother has never used a computer.
Your mom's not your funniest. Well, okay, maybe so.
It's funny for my end.
Okay.
I tried to give her a cell phone, and it was a very simple cell phone. All it did was call, and it was really easy. All she had to do was push a button, and an operator would come on and tell her and ask her who she wanted to call, and she could say, my daughter, and then the operator would fix that.
Oh, yeah.
It couldn't
have
been easier.
Right.
Well, she couldn't get that she had to put it to her ear, because it didn't have a cord and a separate receiver. And so she'd call me. She'd press the button. She got that if she pressed the button, she could get me. She'd call me, and I'd answer her, and I'd say hello, and I'd hear her way off. You know, the phone is in her lap, and she's her head's up 3 feet. And I'd say, hello. And she'd say, hello, hello. Mom, put the phone up to your ear. Hello. Hello, Mom, put your phone up to your ear. Hello, I don't know where she is. She's not answering. And it was funny sometimes because I'd be screaming and it wouldn't work. So I had to get her a phone that had a coiled receiver.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
she saw as a phone. But
yeah.
That is an example of that communication device would not work for her. Did not work for her. And people in an older generation who've never, ever operated or barely recognize a computer in the room won't be able to respond to your emails or your text messages. So if you're of a generation where everybody texts or everybody communicates through Facebook, then there's going to be a what I call a gap violation between you. There's space where there shouldn't be space. There's distance where, in a healthy relationship, there should be more interaction. And by the same token, grandparents who want to keep up with their grandkids and who are open to learning something new are invited to take these on. These machines seem very foreign and scary, even, to some in the older set. And if they'll learn that, and it can be simply taught, as we know, well, those of us who use it easily think, oh, it's simple. Well, it's not simple to somebody who's never operated a computer. But anyway, if they'll take the time to learn that, then they can show up more for a generation that just communicates that way. So in my book, I've got a graph that tells you when you need to be thinking about this, and no matter what your age is or what generation you're in.
Yeah. I think we have some callers on the line. I'm going to check and see if we do. I guess this is a Skype number. I'm not sure. It just says 1111111111. Who's this?
Hi, Scott. It's Hugh Charlton. How are you?
I'm good, Hugh. You're on with Anne Catherine. What's your question tonight?
I think her book is so important for these times, and I stand in my truth, and I am transparent, but I interacted with someone who was trying to mind manipulate me, and she's very sophisticated, and then she found trigger points where she thought she could put me into fear, but it backfired because, again, I'm totally transparent, and I found that I was dealing with a full-blown narcissist. It was quite something. She became threatening to me in a paranormal way. And it's interesting, too, because Anne is my wife's name, and she was an identical twin, and her twin sister's name was Catherine. So I'm wondering if Anne would have any interest in exploring this for follow-up books or whatever, because I have some very... powerful information to get out, too.
Maybe you need to write that book, Hugh.
Well, I have a few on a blockbuster movie in me, but my primary goal is bringing truth and transparency to the forefront, and bringing spirituality into global economics, so I'm staying in that area.
Very good. Well, Annie brings up an important point about boundaries, and boundaries is sort of the keystone of all this, and you spend some time talking about boundaries, and you have three distinct kinds of boundaries. You have one that's too thin, one that's just right, and, of course, one that's too thick. And it's not to be good on either extreme, is it, or to interact with people on either end?
Well, I talk in the book about the leaky Lucys, the people who tell you too much, and information, the too much information person. And then blocked Bart, whose boundary's so thick that a new idea can't reach him, and his own ideas and experiences can't go out to somebody else. In some places, it's important to have a boundary that thick. In other places, it's important to have it more on the boundary to be more flexible and let more out. When crossing a boundary appropriately leaves both people with new information and new energy. And so if at any time you are interacting with someone and you feel your energy going, you feel yourself getting heavier, or you find that you're having more trouble thinking of how to express yourself, then you have a boundary that's too thin, that you're with someone that with whom you should be protecting yourself more. On the other hand, if you're with someone who's very open and energetic, and you find yourself doing something that makes that person lose energy, it's time to look at yourself and pay attention to how you're communicating. Yeah. Are you overpowering that other person? Is your personal boundary too thin so that you're putting yourself in a one-up position?
Yeah. Hugh, I'm going to put you on hold because Ann's only with me another 5 minutes. I want to see if our other caller listening in has a question as well, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's good to hear from you. All right. I think I know who this is. It would be, of course, Deanna down there in beautiful Hollywood, Florida. Deanna, good
in
evening.
In beautiful Miami, definitely.
Oh, Miami. What a wine. That's fine.
That's Carmen. I really like the conversation, and I was thinking when you say thick, the density or the frailty, and I usually get on the side of frailty, and it's hard to assert oneself without running the risk of being rude, Anne Catherine.
So you feel like your boundary's a little too thin with certain people? Uh-huh. Okay. But you're afraid you'll hurt their feelings if you toughen it up?
Or be impolite, which I don't wish to be.
Well, you do the other person the honor of trusting them to handle their own experience if you find a way to say what's true for you. And it doesn't have to be said rudely. But say you have do you have trouble expressing that you have a difference with somebody?
Often.
Uh-huh. Okay. So would you like a little tool for that?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So you could tell the other person, I'm interested in what you're saying. I respect it. And I'm realizing I have a different viewpoint than you do.
Good.
Would you? And you could say, would you be interested in hearing a difference?
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to read the book.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's really great. I think you'll get a great deal out of it, Deanna.
Yeah, the Book of Boundaries is a good idea, especially now when everything is either too short or too long, and you're right. I enjoyed the conversation, both of you, Scott and Catherine.
Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to put you back on hold.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Catherine, my guest, the new book, Boundaries in an Overconnected World, from New World Library. What's the preferred website, by the way, Anne?
For my website or?
Well, for you. Yes, your work and the book.
Yeah, my website is oneannecatherine.com.
Okay, as mentioned. And
I actually have a... Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, you have a website for the book.
Yeah, and Boundaries has a Facebook page, and so do I. And also, on my website, oneannecatherine.com, there's kind of a fun tool you can use just to get yourself, test yourself to see if you are overconnected. And I'll be changing that now and then so you can go back and use another tool.
What would you like people to gather from the book, Anne, Catherine, in this crazy, oversaturated upload world we live in? What's your hope for the readers?
My hope is that they'll pause, and I have actually a method for that on my website, a step-by-step process that they can use to take a look at what really matters to you and then see if a boundary is needed to protect that. And it's a little flow chart that you can work your way through and diagnose yourself, and then it tells you where to go from there.
Well, the book's a real service, and it's very direct. It's not filled with a lot of prose. It has some very important lessons in it, examples, protocol you can use in almost every single circumstance, and you will find if these have been issues for you or you know someone with the issue. You know, I'm not getting it for myself, for my friend, you know. So, you really will gain a lot from it. You really will. Boundaries in an Overconnected World, Setting Limits to Preserve Your Focus, Your Privacy, Your Relationships, and Sanity. We all need more of that. Anne Catherine, tonight here on Positively Incorrect. It's published by New World Library. And Anne, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Scott.
All right, you have a...
Thanks for joining me in the Love Cafe community. Don't forget, join us on Facebook at Scott Cluthie's Love Cafe and sign up for the newsletter. Till next time, this is Scott Cluthie. Thanks again for stopping by the Love Cafe.